So welcome to financial management. And that begs the question immediately, what is financial management all about? Well, financial management is all about money. Now in this module, we're going to be thinking about organisations and the money at their disposal. And there are four key questions that I will want to ask and attempt to answer. Where does the money come from? In other words, what are the sources of funding for the organisation? What does the organisation do with that money? In other words, what are the uses of the funding? And I hope immediately that's reminding you of what you'll have learned in the first term module, IB124, Introduction to Financial Accounting, where you've spent a lot of time thinking about sources versus uses of funding. In this module, I want to go further and look at efficient ways in which the funding can be used. Now, what do I mean by efficient? There are two important dimensions here. Rate of return, which is a measure of the gain or the value added, versus risk, which is a measure, as we'll come to learn, is a measure of the spread in possible outcomes. Now, organisations, just like individuals, are scared. They're risk averse, so they like to keep the level of risk as low as possible. But organisations, like individuals, are greedy. That's a rather offensive term, isn't it? So we usually say rational. And rational means they want as high a rate of return as possible. So really, organisations, like individuals, would like to do two things simultaneously. Achieve as high a rate of return on their investments as they can, whilst at the same time exposing themselves to as little risk. And the bad news is, it's not possible to do both simultaneously. There's a need for a trade-off. And that's what I mean by efficient use of financing. Optimising that trade-off between wanting to maximise the rate of return whilst at the same time minimising the level of risk. And the fact that I've introduced risk to you, now we don't know really yet what risk is, and we're only going to scratch the surface of what risk is in this module. You have to wait until IB 235, Finance 1 in second year, to learn in detail what is risk, how do we measure it, and how can we manage it. But we will attempt to learn something about how companies control or manage risk. And that risk can take different forms. For instance, if the company is partly financed by debt, so it has loans on its balance sheet on which it pays interest, it may be exposed to the risk that the interest rate goes up unexpectedly. That's a form of interest rate risk. How can the company mitigate that risk? If the company is actually a group of companies with some overseas operations, perhaps the materials it buys in order to go about its business, it buys overseas and pays for in a foreign currency. Perhaps the products that it makes or the services that it delivers, it does so in a foreign country, and therefore the revenue it generates are in a foreign currency. At the end of the day, all of that has to be repatriated back into the domestic currency, and that depends on what the exchange rate is. So a company with overseas operations is going to be exposed to exchange rate risk, the possibility that the exchange rate will change in an unfavourable direction. That's what's worrying the company. What might these organisations be? Well, there's more than one way in which I can characterise them. I could characterise them according to size. Is it a small organisation or a large organisation? Who owns it? Is it publicly owned? I.e., typically, is it a company with shareholders? Or is the company held in private hands? E.g., a company like Virgin, that used to have shares listed on the stock market, but which was taken back into private hands by Richard Branson. Or is it in the so-called third sector or not-for-profit sector? So that's another way in which I can characterise organisations. When I was your age, there would be no end of examples of organisations that were owned by the state. Because, e.g., public utilities like electricity, gas, water, the railways, these were all nationalised companies. Today, I'm really struggling to find a company that's still owned by the government or the state. The one that comes to mind is Royal Mail. And for how much longer? Your guess is as good as mine. So there are a few examples today of state-owned organisations. In the past, there were more. And what about organisations like law firms or accountancy firms that are basically made up out of a set of partners? They're owned by the partners. What sort of organisation do I have in mind? Well, the sort of organisation I have in mind is what I might call a PLC, a public limited liability company. So that's a company with shareholders. That's a company whose shares are in the public domain. It's publicly owned. What's the bit about limited liability? Well, that's part of the good news for the shareholders. The worst that can happen to the shareholders if the company goes belly up is that they lose their initial stake. It is possible, in theory, that the share price could go to zero. The firm could end up bankrupt. Well, whatever the shareholders paid in the first instance for those shares, that's the most they could lose. There's no way any of the creditors of the firm could pursue the shareholders for additional money. And that's what I mean by limited liability. If you're more familiar with the US, or if you're ever reading a US textbook, and let's be honest, the majority of the finance textbooks are written for a US audience. The reason I've chosen the book I have is it's been rewritten for a UK stroke European audience by a British author. But if you are looking at a US textbook, you'll come across the word corporation. And a corporation, that's the US term for a public limited liability company. So that's what we're talking about in this module. So let's go back to those two first questions. Sources versus uses of funds. I like to draw cartoons or simple diagrams whenever I can because it helps me to explain the story. On the left-hand side of this diagram are a number of different important sources or potential sources of funding for an organisation. The first one are the banks. Banks provide loans to companies. They lend companies money. So banks are a source of debt capital. But banks are not the only source of debt capital. Companies can, organisations can also raise debt capital in the financial markets, in the so-called debt markets. So the financial markets are also a source of debt capital. Of course, the financial markets are also, they are the key source of equity financing. The companies, the organisations I have in mind, all have shareholders. That represents the equity part of the financing. And that's issued in the financial markets to begin with, and it's traded in the financial markets. What do I mean by trading? I mean the ownership of the shares can change hands. A shareholder in the company may not wish to remain a shareholder indefinitely, so he or she can dispose of their shares for cash. That's all going on in the stock market or the equity market, to give it another name. So when you look at the left-hand side of this diagram, you're looking at potential sources of financing for an organisation. And in this module, we're only going to be concerned with the first two. The banks are a source of debt capital. Debt capital can also be raised through the financial markets, namely the debt markets. The financial markets are also the source of equity capital, the shareholdings in the company. To be a little bit more general, if we're looking at a company that is in an early stage of its life, a so-called startup company, a high-risk venture, the funding for that to get it started is typically referred to as venture capital. And that, the source of that venture capital is either the pockets of some very rich individuals or organisations or the banks. Let me distinguish that from private equity. Private equity, a good example of that, is where a firm was previously listed on the stock market, so it was publicly owned, and it's been taken back into private hands, e.g. the example of Virgin that I quoted a few moments ago. Typically, the source of the financing for the private equity is the banks, because whoever is taking the company back into private hands, so that's a key stakeholder in the company, typically that individual or set of individuals, it may be a syndicate, typically that individual or individuals raises a large loan from the banks in order to buy out the shareholders. They provide cash for the shares. Now, we've nothing to say in this module, because it's an introductory module, we've nothing to say specifically about venture capital or private equity. I just want you to be aware that they are also examples of sources of financing, but in special circumstances. On the right-hand side of the diagram, then, are the key uses of the financing. Now, I'm thinking typically of a company that's in the area of manufacturing, but of course it could be in the services sector. I'm thinking typically of a company that owns factories in which it manufactures, it produces the goods that it subsequently sells. So the company has either got to buy the land on which to build the factory, possibly the company rents or leases the land. It needs financing to do that, so buying or leasing the land is a use of financing. Paying for the construction of buildings like factories, and the equipment that the company will use as it goes about its daily business, the equipment that's in the factories, that's all capital expenditure. Now, there'll be long-term employees, and there may also be shorter-term employees. The long-term employees, as the name implies, they're around for the duration. That's another important piece of expenditure. And, of course, you'll know at least as much as I do, given your training in accounting, about the need for a company to establish and maintain working capital to get it through its daily, its weekly, its monthly business. So these are all uses of the financing that the company's raised. Why does it do this? In order to generate cash flows which feed back into the company. Now, what you want to note down, if you haven't already spotted it, is that the loop that's in this diagram refers to the long term. Equity and debt are forms of long-term financing. And most of the uses that I've listed on the right-hand side are likewise for the long term. So this is standing back and looking at the company over the long term, i.e. measured over a period of many years. And in order for this company to go about this cycle, it must remain solvent. So this long-term funding, financing cycle, is all about solvency, staying around for the long term. But the company will never see the long term unless it can get through the short term. And that's where the working capital comes in. So there's an inner cycle which refers to the short to medium term. Now let me be more specific. That inner cycle is looking at the company over a period of no more than 1 year. Actually, what we're thinking about there is the need for the company to have sufficient cash flow to get it from one day to the next, to get it from 1 week to the next, 1 month to the next, etc., etc. So the inner loop in my diagram refers to the short term and is all to do with liquidity, not solvency. Solvency is about remaining in business over the long term. Liquidity is about not coming unstuck, not being unable to pay the interest on your debt, for instance, and getting taken to court. Liquidity is all about having enough cash on a daily or weekly or monthly basis to pay your bills so that you can carry on with your daily business. So there are two distinct time frames in this diagram that remind us that some of a company's financing is long term, the bulk of the company's financing is long term, but there's also short term financing. So the equity component of the company's financing. That's long term. Those shares are not annulled. The shares that exist can be exchanged. They can change hands, but they're typically not cancelled. They're there for the duration. Likewise, the long-term debt. But there are also forms of short-term debt. So all I'm trying to signal to you at this very early stage in the module is that companies need financing on both a short-term and a long-term basis. And we will revisit that as we go through the module. There are several forms of financing, and we can't hope to understand all of them in great detail in what is, after all, an introductory module. So for our purposes, we are going to focus on the two chief forms of financing, equity versus debt. Now, I'm going to say a little bit about equity and debt now, but I'm going to say quite a bit more in the later lectures on company financing. There are other so-called hybrid forms of financing. I mentioned them in passing. I don't need you to know about them in this module. So they are just mentioned for interest. So let's start with equity. You need to know what is equity. So equity refers to the shares in the company. The company is listed on a stock market. The market value of all of those shares is referred to as the market capitalization of the firm. It's the market value of the firm's equity. It's the shareholders who own the shares. What does owning the shares entitle the shareholders to? Answer: a pro rata share in the residual cash flows. Residual cash flows? Yes. What's left over after the company has serviced the demands of other creditors who come first in line? And the creditors who come first in line are the debt holders, i.e. the lenders. So the first thing a company has to do with its cash flows is pay any interest on its existing loans. It may have to pay back some loans if they've reached term, i.e. matured. That's the first thing the company must do. And if it fails to do any of that, it can be wound up in the courts. Interest payments on debt are legally enforceable. The next thing the company must do is pay its tax bill, its corporate tax bill, corporation tax. So when I talk about residual cash flows, what I mean is what's left in the cash flows that the company has generated, say, over the past year, what's left after the company has paid the interest on its debt, i.e. serviced its debt, and paid its corporation tax bill. Because what's left belongs to the shareholders. They might not actually get their hands on it because the shareholders have delegated the responsibility for running the company to the senior managers, the so-called main board. And it falls to the main board to decide how much of this surplus or residual cash flow should we actually return to the shareholders, typically in the form of dividends, and how much of it should we retain for reinvestment. But what there's no doubt about is all of that residual cash flow belongs to the shareholders, whether they actually get it in their hands or not. And that's what's going on in this little cartoon. The equity refers to part of the company's financing. That financing is used to fund the activities of the company. Those activities generate cash flows. I've labelled it as earnings, but that's really an accounting term. Those activities generate cash flows. First call on those cash flows are the interest payments on debt. Second call on those cash flows are the corporation tax bills. Whatever is left belongs to the shareholders, but it falls to the main board of directors to decide how much of that surplus cash flow should be distributed to the shareholders as dividends, how much should be fed back into the company for reinvestment. Now, there's an important point missing from the slide, and I think I thought the same thing this time last year when I gave this lecture, and I forgot to change it, which just shows how stupid I'm getting as I get older. Could you write down that the other key point about equity is limited liability? Now, I've already explained what that means, that the worst that can happen to the shareholders is they lose all of their initial stake. The shares could, if the worst happens, end up worthless. But there's no way any of the creditors, such as the lenders or the taxman, can come after the shareholders for any additional monies that are owed to them. The worst that can happen is they lose all of their initial investment. And that's what's meant by limited liability. And that's a unique feature of equity. Debt is the other chief source of financing. And it's the only other source of financing that we are going to talk about in this module. Now, there are several ways in which we can classify debt, and I'll tell you more about that in a later lecture. All I want you to appreciate at the moment is the debt can be short term or longer term, and typically the threshold is 1 year. If the debt is for less than 1 year, if the loan is for less than 1 year, then I call that short term. That debt, if it's been raised through the financial markets, that debt can be traded. It can be bought and sold. And if its maturity is less than 1 year, if it's short term debt, the trading goes on in what's called the money markets. If the debt is medium term or longer term, raised through the financial markets, again it can be bought and sold. Who owns it can change. That sort of trading is carried out in what's called the debt capital markets. So the money markets versus the capital markets distinguishes how long is the debt for. Is it short-term debt financing or long-term debt financing? And whilst I remember to say it, the equity market, the stock market, is another example of a capital market because equity is also for the long term. Of course, the loans, the debt rather, is not only raised in the financial markets. As I said earlier, the debt can be in the form of bank loans. And that raises the question as to whether the loan is secured or unsecured. Now, what does that mean? It means that if the company gets in difficulty with paying the interest, are there any assets of the company that can be used as collateral? Can those assets be sold to raise money in order to enable the company to continue to meet its interest payments? If it can, that's an example of secured debt. If there are no such assets, that's an example of unsecured debt. In the UK, some authors refer to secured debt as debentures. So you may come across the word debenture. If you're reading a US textbook, you'll be confused, because in the US they use the term debenture for unsecured debt. Not very helpful, is it? A mortgage is a good example of a secured loan, because at the end of the day, if the person taking out the mortgage can't continue to meet the payments, then the bank or building society that's advanced the loan, they'll just take possession of the house. The house is the assets against which the loan is secured. Now, there are other forms of financing that sit in the middle between equity and debt, and I've listed three, and that's as much as you need to know. The names: preference shares, warrants and convertibles. If you're interested in finding out more, Google search those terms. They're not part of this module. I don't need you to know what they mean. So let's just spend a minute or two talking about the goals of the organisation. Now, in order to get a handle on the goals of the organisation, I have to be clear about who are the key stakeholders. I've already mentioned several times now the shareholders. They put up the equity. They own the equity of the firm. I've also mentioned several times the lenders. They provide the debt capital. They own the debt capital. But there are other stakeholders as well, such as the senior managers, the employees more generally, the customers, and of course the suppliers, society and the environment more generally. Are we seriously going to attempt to do the very best for all of these stakeholders? And the answer is, it's not possible. So what I'm going to suggest to you, and this is going to be our guiding principle throughout this module, is that the key financial goal for the sort of organisation that I have in mind, that's a public limited liability company with shareholders, the key financial goal is to maximise shareholder wealth, or if you prefer, shareholder value. But we can't be completely blind to the needs and demands of these other stakeholders. So what I'm going to say to you is, the key financial goal is to maximise shareholder value, subject to the constraint that we at least satisfice. That means keep happy, without doing the very best by, keep happy each of the other important sets of stakeholders. So as far as the lenders are concerned, we make sure we pay the interest on time and in full. We never miss any interest payments, and where the loan matures, we repay the loan in full. As far as the senior managers are concerned, we offer them considerable incentives. Now, that could be reflected in the remuneration package, in particular the bonuses. That's a rather delicate issue, isn't it, right now in this country and the US, when the banks, the big players in the banks, are about to receive their annual bonuses. But that's a way of keeping the senior managers happy. We offer the employees good terms and conditions to work in. That's how we satisfy those needs. The customers, we aim to provide value for money to. The suppliers, we try to be reasonable with. We pay our bills in time. Of course, if we're good at managing the company, we'll also attempt to negotiate good terms. But we'll try to avoid the accusation that's often levelled, for instance, at the major supermarket chains of, and forgive my language, screwing their suppliers, because they have the power. But let's not forget the environment in society. Whatever the company is doing as it goes about its lawful business, we are managing our carbon footprint. We're trying not to pollute the environment unduly. So I better not mention the company for which I used to work for a number of years that had that problem in the Gulf of Mexico last year. Will not mention the name. And of course, the company will pay all of its taxes, its corporation taxes, in full. So that's what we're going to do in this module. We're going to try and understand better how these organisations are run. And the guiding principle is going to be they are run in such a way as to maximise shareholder value, shareholder wealth. Now that begs the question, how are we going to measure shareholder wealth? And that's where I depart from my accounting colleagues. Because in this module, what we care about is cash flow, not profit. And the reason it's cash flow is that cash flow can be measured objectively, where profit is a more subjective concept. It reflects, for instance, the accounting policies of the firm. How does it deal with inventory? How does it deal with writing down the book value of its fixed assets? Change the depreciation policy, and you change the charge of depreciation to the profit and loss account. So you change the amount of profit declared. I can't work with that in finance. It has to be a number that everyone is going to agree on and isn't subject to the vagaries of the individual company's accounting policy. And again, the other way in which I'm going to differ from my accounting colleagues is they are, it's the nature of their trade, they're looking backwards in time. They're typically looking over the past accounting year, whereas in finance, we're going to be looking into the future. So what we're going to be concerned with are the cash flows that we expect the company will be able to generate out into the future. The piece of magic is, what do we do with those expected future cash flows, or if you prefer, those cash flow forecasts? What is it we do with those cash flow forecasts in order to turn them into a single number that means shareholder value today? Because that's what we want. So what we're going to be learning in this module is, what is it we do with these cash flow forecasts out into the long-term future? What is it we do in order to come up with a single number that will represent shareholder value, and which we can then probe, investigate, to see whether the managers are doing the very best by their shareholders? Now, that procedure of taking hold of those cash flow forecasts and bringing them back to the present day, that involves two distinct dimensions. One, we have to be able to forecast those cash flows, But those forecasts are going to be subject to uncertainties. So we have to have some means of assessing the risk embedded in those cash flow forecasts. And the other dimension is time, because those cash flow forecasts refer to points out into the future, and we're going to want to do something with them to bring them back to the present day. And that process is called discounting. And discounting is going to be the main thing that I tell you about in tomorrow's lecture, at which I hope to see each and every one of you. So thanks for coming.